Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
Thank you, Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter. Welcome back, Cardinal fans, after a wild and woolly weekend of NFL draft. Wow, not only has the draft come a long way, and I don't know if you saw the clips with Mel Kiper at the end, and you know, what a dream come true for Mel Kiper back in the day when, you know, the draft was taking place in like a hotel conference room in New York and not televised, and to see where it's come today with, you know, multiple sites now and how well prepared they are and what a pageantry it is, was stretched out over 3 days. Wow. And the excitement that it generates. And they had record crowds in Detroit, which was awesome. So what a weekend. And also, I'd just like to say that what a long way the Cardinals have come in 2 years in the manner in which they are approaching these drafts. I found the draft just purely enlightening in so many ways. And I got to say this from the start, and I think, you know, our guest, Kevin Murray, who I'll introduce in a minute, will concur. At each pick, I had probably another player in mind. And it wasn't until, you know, I started asking myself, well, why, for example, would he pick Max Melton? Would he want Max Melton over Mike Sanristil, who was my favorite slot receiver, slot cornerback in this draft? And then when I started piecing the, you know, connecting the dots, I realized, oh my goodness, there are concrete reasons why that just jumped out at me. And so I kind of was able to do that with each pick. And we're going to go through pick by pick and kind of discuss the ways in which the things we learn about the draft picks and about Monty's approach and about our own systems and how they cater, you know, they cater these picks to a 12 personnel on offense as a base offense, and also as a 34 defense, catering the picks to that style of defense, had excellent context in why these players were picked. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Kyle introduce the picks at the position and round in which they were taken at the number. And then Kevin Murray, who's a Cardinals podcaster in the UK, who was huddled in his British bunker all weekend with howling winds and rains, is now sitting there on a sunny day. It's like a Shakespearean play. At the end, the sun comes out and everybody realizes, oh, wow, this is good. Kevin, welcome. Happy to have you here. Really a fan of your work. And
thanks very much, Walter. Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. It's it's a bit deflated because the draft is over, so now we have to wait another year. But after this draft, I am extremely excited to see where this team's heading this year. So looking forward to training camp now and rookie mini camp and getting into the season now, really. So, yeah.
Outstanding. So, Kyle, go ahead. What happened in round one?
I'm not sure. Could you guys help me out? Who did the Cardinals take with their first pick, huh? Anyone know? Anyone have any idea who the Cardinals took? Oh, that's right. With their first round pick, number 4 overall, the Arizona Cardinals selected wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr., a.k.a. Maserati Marv, from Ohio State University.
So it's almost poetic that it was 20 years and a day that we last drafted a receiver in the top 5 of the NFL draft, who actually turned out to be pretty good. I don't know if you're familiar, but his name was Larry Fitzgerald. And it's quite fitting that, you know, the Cardinals were in this prime position at the 4th spot. And there's all the talks about trade down, but we stuck and we picked arguably the best receiver in college football for the past however many years to fill that massive position of need at us. So I was team stick and pick, and I'm so glad that we did. This guy is phenomenal. His nuances, the way he uses his feet, his body, he's so twitchy. He knows how to get open. He's every draft analyst says that this is a slam dunk pick and he's set to be the safest prospect in this draft to make it as a pro. And, you know, it's just the way it was what we needed. You know, 1,200 yards in both of his past two seasons as a starter, you know, average 18 yards per reception. That gives K1 his true X receiver, his number one receiver. Yeah, it's a slam dunk. I love everything about it.
Yeah, and it's, what did he have? 28 touchdowns the last 2 years or something close to it. I mean, he gets the ball in the end zone. You know, what was interesting to me was when we did our Monday mock draft special with Joe Camo, you know, I was hoping the Cardinals would get a trade down to 6 to add some more value. But the key pick in the draft was at 3 with the Patriots taking Drake May. And we then learned that the value of J.J. McCarthy was not as profound as perhaps some had thought. And so, but in a way, what was really interesting about this pick, and, you know, it was tantalizing for me throughout the process, because I've never had to deal with a prospect who basically ghosted the pre-draft process the way that Marvin Harrison did. So I didn't know mentally or emotionally how to cope with that or handle it. If I had known all along, Kevin, that, you know, when I heard, you know, how, you know, enthusiastic Marvin Harrison Jr. was upon being picked by the Cardinals and, all the things he said, if I'd known that all along, I could have, you know, slept better every night for that whole time, because came as such a relief. I didn't know if, you know, he was that high on the Cardinals or not. It was just such a lack of information, and because he didn't speak publicly during the whole process, except utter a sentence after his dad spoke in that video that his dad put out. You know, I was all along wondering what's going on. In the meantime, we had Roma Dunze putting on an absolute clinic as to how to crush a pre-draft process. And I have to say, I bet there's a little part of Monty that, you know, looked at Adunze and just said, oh my God, this guy is something. But Monty said, and if you were going to create a scenario in which the likelihood of you getting Marvin Harrison at 4 would be the case, would be at its maximum, it happened the way that it happened, because, you know, Monty behind the scenes knew a lot more than we did, for one. We heard the draft rumors that Harrison had assurances that he would be picked by the Cardinals no matter what, if he was available. So if that transpired already, you know, if there was that understanding, a wink, wink, it puts into context why Marvin Harrison wouldn't want to bust his butt traveling all over the place and doing 40 times and this and that. I mean, it made a lot of sense after the fact. And Monty said that when Harrison came for his 30 visit, it became very clear to him once he got to know Marvin better as a player, because as a person, the player part was already obvious in so many ways, but the person part, how he fit in, how he jived in that building with Kyler and all the rest, and his buddy Paris Johnson Jr. So all that just fit like a glove. And man, I mean, the other part was that if, you know, because Marvin Harrison Jr. kind of, you know, took a passive approach to the pre-draft process, he didn't create the kind of positive buzz that might have given the top three teams pause about taking a quarterback instead. Because put it this way, if you think pound for pound, who's the best NFL prospect of the four? Those first three quarterbacks or Marvin Harrison Jr.? What would you say to that, Kevin?
No, I 100% agree. I think this whole, he's played this pre-draft process quite well simply for because of who he is. So he had that edge, like you said, that he knew that the three teams before us were picking needed a quarterback. And, you know, there were rumors at the start, do the Patriots just take Marvin Harrison, but Marvin Harrison Jr., but it's also a case of, well, if he knew that that leverage was there, he's also had that ability of saying, well, I could come to New England, but who's going to be throwing me the ball? It's, you know, I think it was quite early set on that the Cardinals were probably going to be in for him. And also having, you know, a Hall of Fame dad giving you advice as well has probably been the right thing. But I think, yeah, the 30 visit that he had with us was probably where we solidified, you know, that he was our guy. And I think the way that he's played it is because he did have that leverage to do that, I think. You know, like I said, knowing those three teams, you know, the Bears were going to go quarterback, the Commanders were going to go quarterback. It was just obviously them weighing it up between New England and the Cardinals. And I think once we made our interests quite clear to him, I think, and that he wanted to come here. And Paris Johnson Jr. has kept saying that, you know, when he was talking to Marv, he said that he wanted to come here. And that is also a really, really good feeling. I think that speaks volumes about the culture that Monty and JG are setting at the Cardinals now, to the fact that players of this caliber want to come and play here. You could argue that, you know, they might just be saying that because, you know, it's the opportunity they've been given and it's the right thing to say. But I do genuinely feel like this is the place that he wanted to come and wanted to play. So that's exciting in itself, never mind before he's even put anything down on the field. I think it's really exciting to see that in this caliber of prospect.
Yes. Kyle, what do you, you know, would you consider Marvin Harrison Jr. a more sure thing as a prospect than any of those top three quarterbacks?
Well, I didn't personally sit down and scout, but I've heard so many people say Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one prospect in this draft class, and especially compared to the Jaden Daniels, Drake May options, I think most people would argue that, yes, Marvin Harrison Jr. as a singular prospect was better, but they understood why Washington and New England made the decisions that they did to draft quarterback because of the state of their franchises, because they had top picks. I mean, at the end of the day, six quarterbacks got taken in the top 12 too. So at the very least, if it were New England, I think it's hard to argue that Marvin Harrison Jr. wasn't, as a consensus, regarded as a more top prospect than Drake May.
Yeah, and Marvin Harrison Sr. laid this all out when he spoke candidly with the Arizona media, and he was great, by the way, at the presser. And you know, he said, "Look, we looked at the draft and saw three quarterbacks coming off 1, 2, 3, and you know, there's not much we could do about that, but we felt pretty good that we weren't going to get past 4. So then the thought became, well, how do we want to approach this? Do we need to jump all over the place? And, you know, kind of, you know, bend over backwards to try to, you know, bust our butts in the process? Or do we want to just train on football things and do what veterans players do in the off season? Get themselves ready physically, mentally, and skill-wise. Now it makes sense. Before, there were questions about it. Now I can concede that I get it now. And because, I'll just add this, is that they're listening to Marvin Harrison Jr. talk this weekend was a dream come true. I mean, there's nothing, he looks like a very humble, he doesn't look like someone who's coming in with his nose high and like a privileged, you know, with an air of privilege at all. Very humble, wants to get with Kyler and be the, you know, have he and Kyler be the connection that his dad had with Peyton Manning. Loved that part.
Yeah, so it's almost, it's almost like he's media shy, which is not what you expect for, like I said, a caliber of his a player of his caliber and the son of a Hall of Famer. It was great to see. And I love seeing players like that, you know, who are almost media shy, because you see too much of players wanting to hog up the line, like especially a player at his position as well. You know, we all know what receivers tend to be, the divas of the NFL. So to see that in him, I love that as well.
Fantastic. So before Kyle announces the Cardinals' second pick in the first round, Kevin, I wanted to ask you, were you hoping the Cardinals would trade up from 27?
Originally, I was, yes. Yeah, I thought from the talent that was on the board, and especially how the board fell, like it was unprecedented. I think we saw offensive prospects fall until, what was the pick, the Colts at 15? It was 15. Right. So to see that amount of defensive talent being pushed down the board, I was expecting us to see a trade up. I was, yeah.
Right. In retrospect now, are you glad they stayed?
I am, yes, yes. Well, I'll touch on the thoughts on the next pick about what I thought about this, but I was quite surprised, but I am glad that we stuck at 27 and picked who we did now.
All right, let's go to Revenge of the Red Rain Commissioner. Kyle, who is the next pick?
Yeah, the 27th pick in the first round, the Arizona Cardinals selected defensive lineman Darius Robinson from the University of Missouri.
So, yeah, as I was just mentioning, there was another player I was originally hoping that we would pick at 27, which was Jazon Newton, the defensive tackle from Illinois. But as the round sort of progressed, I realized the fact that there's a reason that he might have slipped to 27, and that was because of this Jones fracture injury that's been hounding him. And obviously, we had selected Darius Robinson. Now, it was a bit of a player, a bit out of left field. I think we, you know, heard rumblings that it was a player that we liked. But I was a little bit disappointed at the time. But after I started to think about it and watch the tape and think about the type of player he is, it was growing on me. The versatility, you know, playing edge, could play tackle, you know, could play 3 technique, 5 technique, could even potentially push it to a 7. You know, I love his size, his motor, really competitive division in the SEC. But it then started to dawn on me why we chose this type of player, his versatility of play across that line. And I was sold on him the moment I saw his post-draft presser when he broke down his week. And he goes through what he does about watching film, how he treats his body, what he does for breaks, when he starts watching film, when he starts reading up on the next team he's playing. And I thought, that's it, that he is preaching exactly what JG has asked for since day one, about watching film and how you prepare for games. And the more I learned about him, the more I learned about him as a human being as well. Again, that solidified the fact of why they targeted this type of player, and more importantly, this type of person to fit into this culture and this almost rebranding of this Cardinals team. So I'm a big fan of it. And again, like I said, when I went back and watched the tape, he's the master of the push-pull. I think he's going to be a really, really great player in this Nick Rallis defense. So really look forward to seeing what he can do for the Cards.
Yeah, concur with all that. And what struck me as very meaningful about this pick is, if you look back at the Cardinals' 34 defenses, this was one of my nitpicks about Steve Keim, was not drafting prototype 34 prototypes, just kind of putting square pegs in round holes. Never quite, you know, all the positional failures that took place. This is such a key pick, because if you go back historically to when the Cardinals were playing their best 34 defense, it was with Calais Campbell at defensive end. He made that defense special. And when Campbell left, we had it briefly again with J.J. Watt. We won 7 straight games with Watt healthy to start the 2021 season. And then, you know, last year we saw J.J. Watt play out of his mind, and you know, he was the save, one of the, he and Buddha were the saving graces of that defense. But getting a stud inside like that, now it's a unique position because it's you get crossed between a three tech and a five tech, so you can do all these things with him in there. But there's no question he's going to command double teams, which in turn keeps your linebackers clean. Also, what we were missing with Bilal Nichols and Jones, Justin Jones, good pickups if you want to stop the run, but neither one of them is a prolific pass rusher. This kid, Robinson, is. And, I mean, he brings the length. He reminds me a lot of Chandler Jones, and Chandler Jones coming out of Syracuse, who the Patriots first started out inside and then they kicked him outside. I don't think that's going to happen here. I think that, although at times I think Darius will rush from the edge in a four-man line when they're rushing the passer. But I think primarily he's going to be rushing the passer from the inside, which in today's football, taking away the middle of the field and get your hands up and passing lanes and everything, this is really a well-thought-out pick. If we're going to address inside out first, this is the kind of guy you want because of his length. He's 6'5", he's 285, he's got tremendous strength in his hands, and in terms of the coefficient of what you want for that position, he is ideal. And so that was just so enlightening to see Monty do that there. I wasn't sure that Darius would be on their radar that soon at 27 like you were. And I thought all along that they were going to try to draft Chop Robinson at 27, which, it was an interesting call because you worried about Chop's lack of production, but you look at the player and you look at his gifts, and that situation was solved when Chop came off the board several picks earlier. And I would have been curious, Kevin and Kyle, if both Chop and Darius Robinson were on the board at the same time. Now that I've sort of been enlightened by this, by Monty, I think he would have taken Darius.
Because yep, I agree. I agree.
Inside out. Yeah. So he stayed, which I'm so glad he did. I didn't want to give up one of those. I mean, the last thing I wanted to give up was the 35 pick, like we did last year, the early pick in the second round. I was just so relieved that he stayed and didn't give up one of our third rounders. And then we'll get to the next pick where he added another third rounder for us. But so I was really impressed with that and really impressed with Robinson as being the choice there. Let's get back to being really physical and getting a guy you need to double team in that middle who's a pass rusher. All right, so now we shift to round two. Kyle, first the trade. We traded back with the Falcons.
Mm-hmm. Traded back 8 picks, picked up a third rounder, and sent back. It was either a 5th or a 6th rounder they sent back to Atlanta.
It's a 6th, yeah.
Pick 186. So that they got from the Vikings for Josh Dobbs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The significance of that. Well, let's, like they say in that song, you can't look back. You should never look back. Out on the road today, I saw a deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. A voice in my head said, you can't look back. You should never look back. We're not going to go back to Dobbs and all that. So we're going to move forward. And man, good move, Kevin, on that trade or what?
I think it was a fantastic trade. Absolutely. Moved down 8 spots for an extra third. So basically moved down 8 to pick up another top 100 pick for the cost of a 6th. So right. I think that was a fantastic use of the assets that we had. And again, this is a question you raised earlier with Darius and Chop. It's a case of, was Max Melton their guy all along? And I think right. It was as well. The argument we had was the fact that we went into the second round knowing that there were wide receiver needy teams at the top. So that had the ability to, for one of Cooper DeJean, Kool-Aid McKinstry, were both still on the board. Obviously, going into the second, I was pretty confident that we'd be addressing corner in the second. But obviously, both of those players came with concerns of injury history. So again, you know, Cooper DeJean just coming off a broken leg, and Kool-Aid obviously suffering from a Jones fracture as well. So to me, I do think that Max was their target all along as well. So just to see how hyped JG was in the draft room when we made the pick. Again, it seems to be a reoccurring theme, but great flexibility, can play inside, can play outside, you know, absolutely fantastic ball skills. You know, it's, you can't teach that. And I think this again is a running theme with the corners that we've taken this year. And, you know, 15 pass breakups since 2021, which is the fourth best in the Big Ten. You know, that's still pretty impressive. And again, extremely athletic. And I think arguably his best game came against Ohio State, lined up against his now teammate, Marvin Harrison Jr. So, yeah, I was surprised to see Max Melton go this high. But again, I think it's a very JG type pick. And yeah, I think it's a solid pickup for our corner room.
Yeah, that was the really enlightening thing, was like people going crazy about DeJean. Now, and I get that, because DeJean, you know, on mock draft simulators, he was top 10 on the PFF board. I may have been looking at his name all along, thinking, you know, boy, those mock draft simulators create a lot of anxiety for fans in this draft.
Yeah, I made this point to Joe as well during the draft, which is the case of, I feel like people pay too much attention to especially the PFF big board. Now, don't get me wrong, I think they do great work there at PFF, but I think people see that as gospel, and they need to remember that it's sort of usually one guy's opinions for that. So it's not the consensus big board or the team's individual board. So my biggest concern with DeJean was, do you play him at corner or do you play him at safety? And I think that was the idea as well, as I know they like this positional flexibility in this Cardinals regime, but I do wonder that, you know, what would you play DeJean at? And I think that was probably a deciding factor for them as well.
And here was a deciding factor for me, and this was Kyle, who was the pick at 43 for the Cardinals?
That would be Max Melton, the cornerback from Rutgers.
Yes. Very Belichickian pick. I mean, Bill Belichick had a pipeline to Rutgers cornerbacks that was the McCourty brothers. You can go right down the line. This Rutgers cornerback is special. As I compared him to DeJean, what I liked about Max Melton better is better press coverage, press corner. In fact, I think much better, up in people's faces. What the tape on DeJean was really impressive, because I see DeJean more of a zone player than a man player. He plays really well with the ball in front of with the players in front of him. What I saw repeatedly, the weakness I saw, was kind of too much cushion and late breaks at times on the ball, particularly in man and guys crossing his face, even on the goal line, which surprised me. He was giving up some touchdowns where I'm just like, why weren't you up playing leverage? And you just let the guy cross your face and give up a touchdown. So, and I think Kevin hit the nail on the head. I mean, if it were me, I think I'd lean more towards safety with him, and I think the Eagles are doing that. The fact that he slid all the way to 40, you know, it's partly maybe the Isaiah Simmons syndrome too. It's like, you don't know exactly where he fits. You know, he's a good, real fantastic football player. He also can return punts, but because of that uncertainty, because perhaps being, you know, unavailable for most of the, you know, with the injury for most of the pre-draft process and this and that, you know, there were some question marks, and amazing that he slid to 40. Now, it was very clear that not only did the Cardinals look in a different direction at 27, but given the opportunity to stick and pick DeJean at 35, they didn't do that. So it was very clear at that point that DeJean was, there were guys higher on their board in the defensive backfield than DeJean.
Well, even if you take it beyond DeJean too, I mean, the four picks leading up to Arizona, back to back to back to back, were all cornerbacks too. So you have DeJean go at 40, Kool-Aid right. McKinstry goes at 41, and then Kamari Lassiter right. goes at 42 also. So they were willing to watch a number of these corners. I think those were the fourth, fifth, and sixth to go off the board. They were willing to watch a number of those guys go off the board before taking right. Max Melton.
Yeah, and Mikey Sanders still, who I was hoping for, because he's so good in the slot and he's such a great leader. He went a few picks after that. And, you know, I wasn't surprised because suddenly the corners were flying off the boards. But as I looked more closely at, you know, in retrospect, when you break down the film on Max Melton, you see the feet. You're enamored with the feet. The kid is just nifty with his feet. He's also, you know, playing strength. He holds up really well as a press corner. He flips his hips and plays in shadows. Like Kevin said, he did a fabulous job on Marvin Harrison Jr. And I was wondering, I imagine Monty might have pulled MHJ aside and that, you know, on that second day and said, hey, what do you think of Max Melton? And because MHJ tweeted out much respect once he was drafted. Did you see that, Kevin?
Yeah, I did indeed. Yeah. So obviously that game must still be playing back in his mind a little bit, I think.
Right. And iron sharpens iron. The two of them going at it every day in practice will be great for each other. But yeah, here's the thing absolutely. I love too is that he's got the feet and the strength and the instincts. I mean, he's a ball hawk too. I mean, notice the guys the Cardinals picked up. They're all ball hawks.
Yep. This is what I was going to mention as well. All of the corners that we seem to have picked up and the safety we picked up as well have all gotten typically multiple picks each right. year. And exactly. I think that, again, they have a type. But just to touch on something quickly, you mentioned that this is a very Belichick-type pick. You know who also loved this pick and was one of their sleeper corner of this draft?
Nick Saban,
exactly. So yep. If you know Nick Saban and Bill Belichick are saying that this is a fantastic corner, then I'm all in.
There we go. All right. Yeah. So let's.
The last ahead. Thing I'll add on the cornerback room is that 2 years ago during the 2022 season when the Cardinals had the worst cornerback room, I brought up the point that sometimes when you have a strugglesome position group, sometimes the easiest way to go about it is just change the names in the room. Sometimes that can do wonders. And with this pick, the Cardinals have officially completely changed their cornerback room over 15 months. They have completely swapped out all the names from the 2022 team and have a brand new cornerback room. And I'm very excited to see what happens with that.
Yeah. And you've got a corner right there. Who's going to be able, you're going to be able to stick on the three nemeses the Cardinals have been, you know, facing every year in Cooper Kupp, Tyler Lockett, and Deebo Samuel. So, I mean, or Brandon Ayuk's actually become more of a nemesis recently. Those are three guys that Melton matches up well with. And, you know, he brings, you know, the equal or better athleticism to those matchups and some really good playing strength. And man, I love the way he plays leverage. And he's not as grabby. And, you know, I always worry about cornerbacks who are like that. Like when I was watching JC Horn in South Carolina, he was so highly rated. I was just like, I can't take this guy. I mean, he's like getting away with holding on almost every play. And, you know, that's not gonna fly in the NFL. And, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than getting flagged on holds and PIs, et cetera. So, but, I mean, as terms of fundamentals, Melton's, boy, he's got him and just a very, very impressive player. And, you know, a nice education because I didn't know he was that high on the Cardinals' radar. And now in retrospect, I think if I had known that, like I would have might have known that Marvin Harrison couldn't wait to be a Cardinal, then I would have thought of it differently.
There's a Vizio going around. I can't remember where it was posted. Sorry, I did see it on Twitter, which was before the draft, somebody asked him, where do you think you're going? He says, I just have this feeling that it's Arizona. So it's good to get another reason. It's a good thing that, you know, this is another player who's obviously clicked with this coaching staff and again, is happy and wants to be here. So again, I'm excited. I think this is a very JG type corner, and I'm excited to see what they can do with him.
Yeah, this is a common denominator too, Kevin. It's really good you pointed that out, because the way that the Cardinals are bonding with these kids in their 30 visits, or when they visit with them at the Senior Bowl, like they did with, you know, they saw up front and personal what Max Melton could do in the Senior Bowl. They also saw that with other picks. That was a common theme. It's so impressive. And the fact that Melton felt the vibe is so impressive. And of course, Marvin Harrison felt the vibe. So we're two for two. And Darius Robinson, you know, probably felt it too. I imagine he did. All right, so let's go on to round three. Kyle, who was our first selection in round three?
In round three, the 66th overall pick, the Arizona Cardinals select running back Trey Benson from Florida State.
Go ahead, Kev.
So this was probably the first pick where my eyebrows raised. I did wonder what we were going to do about the running back room. I touched on that on our Monday stream last week as well, about what we do about running back. But I thought we'd be addressing it later. So to come in at 66, like our first pick in the third, and come away with arguably the best running back, you could say. I think you could probably say between Trey Benson and I really like Jonathan Brooks out of Tennessee as well. But so I was quite surprised to see that we addressed running back this early. But again, I think it's just how the board fell. I think it's a really smart choice to draft who's probably the closest player to him out of all of these running backs in this class is draft James Conner's heir apparent. I think he's the closest thing to him. And, you know, he's got great size. He's 6'1", 223. 900 years in his last 2 years out of FSU, you know, really strong downhill runner, you know, really good yards after the catch, you know, 45 missed tackles and over 500 yards after the catch. I think that's bruising. The only thing downside I would say on him is his hands could be a bit better. You know, I think he's dropped, I think about 5% of his passes, I think, which isn't a lot, but I mean, he was targeted sort of, I think, about 20, 25 times. I think he had about only three recorded drops. But other than that, again, I think it was a smart move to move on strengthening the depth in that room. I think obviously the free agency signing of DJ Dallas was probably more of a special teams move.
Right.
And then obviously just strengthening and trying to find this direct replacement for that big body back who you can rely on for, you know, that three down back like James Conner. Right. Yeah, again, it was surprising, but I think it was a smart pick just for how that board fell and the opportunity that was there, and they took that opportunity. So, yeah, surprising, but especially I think he came off a knee injury as well. So that, again, was also a surprise. But I think the type of player that he is, he just fits that mold of the closest thing to James Conner. And I think that's a great idea to get him in there and get him under studying, because we just don't know what's going to be happening with James Conner next year. So,
right. Well said. And, you know, you can't look at this. I mean, if the first thing you look at is a player's feet, OMG, this kid has feet deluxe. I mean, oh my goodness. And what did he run in the 40? Like, it was a blazing time. I think it was like a 4.40 or 4.
It was a 4.39.
4.39. I mean,
with a 1.52 10-yard split.
Yeah, see.
At 223 pounds as well.
Exactly. That's the thing, was you get the tall pass. You know, talking about playing strength. And this is a guy that plays so balanced, too, as he bounces off contact. And, you know, he's – if it's – and I think his instincts are good. I know that that some of the rap on him is that they think he doesn't read holes quick enough at times, but I think you see him stutter stepping and then picking and then going, and he's got that burst that he's like, you know, got a jetpack on him. But once he makes up his mind, and you know, this is the thing about Conner, is that you love James Conner, but he doesn't have that Turbo.
He's kind of the opposite. I think James Conner is fantastic. He's got great patience in waiting for that hole, but he doesn't quite have that second or third gear. Whilst, you know, I think Benson's probably the opposite. He needs to work on that patience to find those holes. But as soon as he gets going, that's it. He's gone. That speed to power is just obscene. So, yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I think that is quite the comparison between the two. So what better person to learn that from than JC?
Yeah. So, and here's the thing that was Belichickian about this is the, you know, Patriot-esque is in the, with the Patriots, they didn't call it a running back room. They called it a running back stable. You know a little something about that in England, the stables out there. Boy, I'll tell you, and the same thing about tight ends. It's not a room. It's a stable. And because, you know, and this is the cool thing, Kevin and Kyle, about this kid, is that I don't think he had more than 20 touches in any game. I mean, so, I mean, he's one of those perfect guys to have in a stable where I think you could overuse a kid like this. And, you know, I think that you want like 15 touches a game from him, and you want other guys around him who can, you know, do their things too. So that this creates a fantastic scenario for the Cardinals this year, with Connor getting the early touches, and then with Benson, what do I call Benson Burner? Benson Burner coming in with you know, his touches, and then you got a change of pace back in Michael Carter, and I still love Amari DiMercado. And the question I have now is that I think that probably puts him on the bubble, which I don't want to see. Because if you're keeping DJ Dallas, in some respects, I kind of wish they didn't do that move with DJ Dallas. I didn't think.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was out of all of our free agency signings, I think that was the one that I questioned the most.
Yeah, because you never knew who you were going to get in the draft yet, and you could have drafted at that spot. But I think for our purposes, Kevin, I think we need to think of him as a special teams player, as you said.
Yeah,
and not absolutely. Even with guys like that in front of him, I don't think he sees too much action as a running back. I think he's a return guy strictly. And now that they've freed up Greg Dortch. Although I think
I was literally about to say exactly the same thing. Now Dortch is going to be our starting slot. I think that's freed up that spot for the returner for the punt and kick returns.
Yeah, and he'll be available for key moments on punt return if we need him. So, all right, Kyle, next up.
All right. So with our second of four third round picks at number 71, this was the pick we got from the Titans as part of the Will Levis trade down. At number 71, the Cardinals select guard Isaiah Adams from the University of Illinois.
Okay, Kev.
So I'm very glad that we addressed O-line. It was interesting how he was listed as a tackle, but he would not be playing tackle for the Cardinals. I think he will be coming into this and competing for this left guard spot. He's a two-year starter at Illinois. I think he played for a community college before he came to Illinois. Obviously he got moved over to right tackle this year just due to, I think, a couple of injuries on their team. So he played his 22 season at left guard and then with a little bit of left tackle. And then in 2023 season, he was moved out to right tackle. So where he didn't have as a good a year, but if you put on the tape where he's playing left guard, he's 6'5", 315. So an absolute mammoth of a human, great movement. And he is a mauler, especially in the run game. So, again, I can definitely see sort of why they've addressed this for him to come in and compete for that starting left guard spot, which is where I do project him playing for us.
Yes.
But again, probably the biggest question mark on everyone's lips for this was it was with other players who were on the board at the time. You know, there was Cooper Beebe, who was arguably the best left guard in this class. But again, I have my doubts on BB as an athlete. I think he's a fantastic player, but I don't think he matches the prototype of what we're looking for at the Cardinals, which is what we see here in Isaiah Adams. So I think he's still got a lot of way to go. He's still a bit developmental. You know, like I said, he's only had 2 years at a high level competition. But again, I think he's still going to come into that with how weak that room currently is. I think he's going to come in with a really strong start, really strong chance of being our starter.
Yeah. This was an education in itself because, you know, everyone using the mock draft simulator. I mean, I don't know how many times I saw, you know, Cooper Beebe, you know, mocked to us by Cardinal fans and pundits, you know, in the third round, as was Christian Haynes in the second round, the Connecticut kid. And so it left you going and scrambling back to, so with Wilkins, with Hayes and Beebe on the board, why do the Cardinals take the kid from Illinois and Isaiah Adams? Well, it's interesting because then you look at, like you said it, when you look at the Cardinals 23, their offensive philosophy of a wide zone blocking team, this kid, you know, Isaiah Adams makes perfect sense. First of all, he's like 3 inches taller than Christian Haynes. Haynes is kind of like a compact, you know, low, you know, kind of, you know, he's 6'2", 312. He's a good player, don't get me wrong. And I think they probably argued back and forth about between Hayes and Adams. But Adams just physically is so imposing. And also, you know, and they run about the same speed, but in terms of, they looked at that tape with Adams at guard, his natural movement skills and moving defensive tackles out of the way is really special. And I think that Hayes does that well, but not quite as well. And the fact that Adams can do this on the move as well, I think made him kind of special there. In ways, and also, I mean, he was outstanding at guard from the pass blocking standpoint. Adams was. In fact, Lindy was ahead of this whole thing. Lindy's draft magazine. Have you ever gotten one of those? Lindy's?
I haven't. I haven't. No.
Draft guide. Well, they had him ranked right up there as the third guard. So they didn't think of him as a tackle at all. And interestingly, I mean, right behind Haynes, they had Haynes as one. They had Layden Robinson from Texas A&M as two. He wasn't a system fit. Adams is three. And they liken him, the pro comp they have for Adams is one of my favorite players, Zion Johnson from Boston College, where I went, who was a first rounder last year. For the Chargers, he is a special player. Interesting, they comped him to him, and
that's quite the comp.
It is, because, and then the comp for Christian Hayes was Dylan Parham from the Raiders, who's a solid player. But I think if you're playing the kind of system the Cardinals are, Adams makes so much sense, and I agree with you that this was strictly, and plus, what did he play at Illinois? Left guard. He is a left guard,
exactly. Not a right guard.
Okay, the fact that he played left guard there, they could see him at left guard. I think he plugs in there, and he's going to compete, and sooner probably rather than later, he's going to be, you know, when they think he's ready, he's going to be the guy in there. And I think they solved that, that part of their puzzle, you know, the puzzle piece that has been missing, and, you know, they've tried other guys in. So this interestingly means now that I wonder what's going to happen with John Gaines. Whether
I think he's going to be our center of the future.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that is that Tristan Colon is really good. I mean, people don't realize he was playing out of position last year at left guard, and I thought he held up pretty well. But, I mean, Colon has – if you watched him at center, and we didn't get that chance this year in games, but I've watched him before at center, and like he's just such a natural at the center position. But Gaines is too, and they're both good, great depth, you know. And then they also like the kid Schmidt that they re-signed. I mean, there's so much depth that's along the offensive line.
There are worse problems to have. You know, depth on the offensive line is something I think we've missed for the past few years. So to have that is fantastic.
It is. And I'm trying to piece out, if they were going to keep 10 players, who are they going to keep? And we'll get to that later when we talk about Christian Jones. But all right, so there goes Adams. Who's next?
So we have a third round pick, which is also from the University of Illinois, tight end Tip Raymond.
Go ahead. Give us the tips on Tip.
Okay. So, excuse me. Again, on the high, on the consensus of a lot of analysts and whatnot, this was what people considered to be a reach. But as the title of this podcast suggests, this is not a reach by any means necessary. This is the perfect Y tight end to perfectly complement Trey McBride. 6'5", 265, who is an absolute mauler. I love Tip Raymond. I really do. I didn't expect him to go this early, but understanding the process behind Monty's thinking, I can see exactly why we've done it. He's an absolute machine at blocking. He's a perfect complement, like I said, to Trey McBride. And Petsin loves running the 12 personnel. So that combination of the two is a solid combination. And, you know, he'd had limited chances with the ball in his hands this past season at Illinois. But what he did do was pretty impressive. You know, he still had something like, let's see here, we had 19 receptions for 203 yards. So, you know, over 10 yards on average per reception. So he can still move with the ball in his hands. I just think he's that prototypical throwback tight end. And again, I think that is a really smart pick to get that compliment to this, the pass catching tight end in Trey McBride, who's obviously come on leaps and bounds last year. Right. And I think we're just going to see him skyrocket again this year. So right. Again, I think this isn't a reach. Everyone keeps saying it's a reach. It's not. I think this is really smart drafting to build your team. And I'm actually a really, really big fan of this pick.
Outstanding. Yeah, when you're a 12 personnel and you draft a tight end with this physical prowess, that's not a reach.
And exactly.
Saying, right. I mean, like we were saying, I mean, this is not a room. It's a stable. They want four or five guys who can contribute and make this 12 personnel. And they run a lot of 13 too, with three tight ends. So, you know, this is a kid physically right now. He's kind of special. Hasn't developed. If you're grading him on production in college, you're not going to be thrilled. But then again, he wasn't, you know, a real main target in their offense at Illinois. So, you know, there's some mitigating factors there. But man, did you see him pushing the sled?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this kid can move people. And I'm going to just throw this out there. I think there's a potential. I mean, if he doesn't make it as a pass catcher, that one day he could be an amazing tackle. Because he's got that build. I mean,
yeah, just from his size, it's like having an extra lineman. Like he's just huge.
Right. And I mean, he's already like 270. And he's going to, in the weight training program, he's going to get up there. Now he'll want to at tight end stay around that weight, but you know, if they ever wanted to convert him to or use him at tackle, I think it's a possibility because he's got the physical. He's a physical prototype for it. He was a walk-on outside linebacker at Illinois, but he started growing and developing, and they thought, man, we got to put him over on the other side of the ball and get him up tight end. And so this kid is raw, but with Ben Steele as our tight end coach, who I think is outstanding. Look at the job he did with McBride. And the other tight with Higgins. Look at the job he's doing with Elijah Higgins. I mean, what a perfect complement, as Kevin said, to McBride and Higgins, to have this kid, a physical stud like this, who really gets after it, joining the group. Yeah, it's not a reach when you look at
it's not a reach. And I'm going to be pounding that table for the next couple of weeks when people are saying it's a reach. It's not.
Right.
And, okay, and Kyle. Well, I was going to add for Walter, for all the talk about Brock Bowers and 12 personnel that we had over the last 3 months of figuring out the draft, ultimately they addressed the same underlying points you were talking about, even if it came with the sixth pick they had in the draft. They still addressed all the underlying points you were talking about Petzing and 12 personnel and a tight end stable, someone to play the Y, and you got your guy later in the third round.
Well, you know, even if they use him as an H-back and a fullback at times, woo!
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine using Roman like how the Niners use Juszczyk?
I mean, like an H-back. Put him in motion and trap block with him? Oh, my God. I mean, put him out now. At times, you know, he'll be able to, you know, fake block and go out and run the flat, get open. I mean, but this is a kid you can put in motion. And, you know, he's just such a good athlete that I think the sky's the limit as to what you can do. I mean, he'll never be a Bowers receiver. I'll concede that right from the start. I wouldn't expect him to be. We already have a Bowers-esque receiver in McBride. My dream of having two of them was like having two queens on a chessboard in that particular offense. But this kid adds some of those dimensions that we might have had with Bowers had we locked in on him. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting. All right. Let's get on to the next pick.
All right. With the fourth of four third round picks, number 90 overall. Also the pick that wraps up the Will Anderson Jr. Cardinals Texans Lions trade from last year too. With the 90th pick, the Arizona Cardinals select from Walter's alma mater of Boston College, class of 1970 something. We have cornerback Elijah Jones.
Why don't you take this one first, Walter, seeing as he is from your alma mater? I'm happy for you to go first on this one.
Oh, thanks. I watched this year. Now, I saw Elijah Jones develop. He was 2 years ago. He was pretty solid. He's a boundary corner. Yes, you could put him in the slot because he can play press man, and he's got good, really good feet. But he's the perfect complement to Max Melton because he's more of a boundary guy who you can play great zones with, and he's good in man coverage, and he's good against bigger receivers. And this past season, Boston College made a real great rally in the middle of the season coming off a slow start. And took Florida State down to the wire, just barely missed extra point, really screwed that one up. But otherwise, it could have been a win. And in that game, Elijah Jones was spectacular against Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman. He had five interceptions, and every one of those were game changers, like where we needed it so bad. And he gets the interception, and suddenly we could suddenly have momentum. Like in the Virginia game, we were getting, you know, blown out most of the game. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, Elijah Jones makes this tremendous interception. And then suddenly the offense is clicking with Tommy Castellanos, the quarterback, and running the football. They came back and beat Virginia in a huge comeback, and which really propelled their five-game winning streak in the middle of the season. So I was so excited. The one thing that troubled me, and I still don't know why, so I'm in the dark about it as everybody else is that we were peaking on five wins and heading into a part of the schedule where I thought we could win a few more. Where they had like two or three games left, but not against top ACC schools, or not top of the league that year. I mean, like Pittsburgh was down. We had them. I mean, there were other games that I thought we could win, and suddenly Elijah Jones is off the team, and you know, and I didn't know if it was an academic thing. And then I thought maybe he decided, you know what, my stock is rising here, as some players do. Maybe I ought to not risk this last couple of games and start training for the combine. That ran through my mind. But to this day, I have no idea why that happened. But all that I've ever heard about him has been really positive. So it might. So he's the defensive guy in this draft that I have a little asterisk next to. And if that was some isolated thing, or if he just made it a business decision that, you know what, I really don't want to risk injury because I'm at the peak of my game. I know I'm going to be drafted high. But quite frankly, and this is to Elijah Jones's testament, had he not gone to the Senior Bowl, I don't think he ever gets drafted in the third round. And if he didn't impress the way he did at the Senior Bowl, because I'm not sure he was on teams' radars enough with this loaded cornerback class to be considered, you know, a round three quarterback. So if he did it that way, he played it correctly because he showed up at the Senior Bowl and he was outstanding there. I think he had an interception in the game, actually. He just gets his hands on a lot of balls and he's long and, you know, he's got length and he's got a vertical, he's athletic and he'll hit you too. I mean, he'll come up and storm the alley and take running backs down, blow up screens, just love the pick. And, again, we got a playmaker back there, 5 interceptions last year. In fact, I think between, Max and Elijah and the rabbit, I think there were 12 interceptions combined last year. I mean, when have we drafted 3, at least 10? I know that.
Yeah, it is. It's like I said, each player had multiple picks the past season. So there's, again, obviously there's something that they've been dialing into is these defensive backs with ball skills. Who have a nose to get the ball. And you mentioned it earlier. I think he's fantastic at stealing the ball, even after the catch. And obviously just his length. You know, I think he's, 7 interceptions over 3 years, I think Elijah Jones had. So again, it's getting up those interceptions, which we've almost been lacking again the last few seasons.
Right. What's going to be fascinating to me, Kevin, is I really think that Max Melton, in my opinion, and Elijah Jones could have more upside than, Sean Murphy Bunting, who they gave $8 million a year to. So that's going to be interesting to watch. I hope all three of them are playing all the time and are fantastic, but, you know, the talent plus the positional. I mean, I could see Elijah Jones being our left cornerback for years to come. He played left cornerback at Boston College last year, the best I've seen in a while. And we've had a few kids, Isaac Yianum, and others who are in the pros now. He just played it, just locked it down. And he can play the right side too, but left corner. He put on a clinic there last year. So, wow.
Yeah, he's, I'm quite surprised he actually fell this far, to be honest. And that's not just saying it because we've picked him, but, you know, there's so much to like about him. Like the first thing is his length, you know, he's 6'2", you know, we were clamoring for that longer corner on the outside. And I think he's got, like he said, he's got great feet, you know, quick pedaling. The thing I like about him as well, which Jim Nagy actually pointed out in his thread about him, is the fact that he very rarely panics when his back's to the ball. He's very calm at sort of, you know, that makeup ability, finds ball, tracks it. And maybe that's obviously why he's come away with so many picks. But you know, that's something, again, that you can't coach. That's the mentality, and that's just the way that he approaches it. Just there's so many, you know, defensive backs just tend to panic when they know they've got to have their back to the ball, and he doesn't. And it just makes it look so easy and so smooth. So, I think it's great value there at pick 90. I really do.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to day three. And one of my most favorite picks ever for the Cardinals coming up. Kyle?
Oh, okay.
Let's go to the commissioner.
Round four, pick 104 overall. The Arizona Cardinals select safety, Dadrion Taylor-Demerson from Texas Tech.
Yep, the rabbit. I think he's going to be quite popular with Cardinals fans in a couple of seasons' time. But the biggest thing I'd say about him is, again, fantastic ball skills. You know, he's got a great feel for the back end of the field. But the one thing that I keep getting quite annoyed about is the fact that people keep saying he's undersized for safety.
Right.
What was his size again? He is, 5'11", 195. Anyone want to have a guess about how big Tyrann Mathieu was?
Yeah, exactly.
Small. 5'9", 190. So he's bigger than Tyrann Mathieu. And I think, like I said, I really like this pick. We spoke about it last Monday, Walter, about obviously the need to get that sort of safety in this room. And I think this is, again, it's a great pickup. You know, like I said, he's got great vision for the backfield, great nose for the ball. He's always around. You know, he's, again, 10 interceptions over 2 years or since 2021. Best is probably that deep safety role. But again, I think it's a solid pickup for us. It's, you know, could have done a lot worse, but picking up a safety who knows how to get the ball.
Yeah, Brett Coleman absolutely raves about him. Did a segment on him on his Draft Gems video. Brett Coleman's a guest of ours. Boy, what a guru he is. His, by the way, props to you, Brett, BK. His gridiron in-draft video of analysis of the picks on day three, since we're talking about day three, had 3,500 viewers.
Oh, I saw about that. That was the live stream he did, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was doing the last round.
Yeah, props to Brett. I love his content. I really do.
Yeah, he's special. And he loves the rabbit. And he kind of got me so fired up on it. I was praying and hoping. I was mocking him in round four the whole time and hoping that we'd get him there. And I'm actually kind of shocked he didn't go earlier. He deserved to be a day two pick, in my opinion, because he's just so active. He's basically a cornerback playing safety, but with a deep safety skills, which the Cardinals have been so lacking. And this was the reason why I wanted him so badly, is that he can play the back end as a center fielder. I saw him make a play on a dime on a bomb up the left side when he was in the middle of the field and got all the way over and intercepted it. I mean, this is the kind of rangy, fast center fielder we've been lacking. I mean, love Buddha and JT. They're strong safeties, though, and you know, they're great in the box. They're both in coverage and in run support. And actually, Buddha's great storm in the alleys from the post. Don't get me wrong. But neither one of them have a forte for playing rangy center field. And how many times did we get burned over the top last year? That first play in the second half of the Giants game was galling. The Tennessee kid caught like a 60-yard bomb. And that reversed the whole, it was 20-0 Cardinals, and suddenly now the Giants have momentum, and again, let's not go back. But we do need to go forward with guys who can be playmakers. And here's the thing too, is that, you know, not only you add Max Milton who can play the slot, and we've got two guys in Garrett Williams and Catrell Clark who can play the slot. Suddenly now we have someone who's as good as all playing the slot in this kid, the rabbit. I mean, he is pesky. And so in a division where we need to cover, you know, they're, you know, every one of the teams that we play against have two slot guys we got to defend often at the same time. Let me just run through it quickly. You got Kupp and now Puka Nacua. So, you know, how are you going to match up on those? Well, now we have a multiple, we have multiple options. In San Diego, I mean, in San Francisco, you got Debo and Ayuk and Jennings and McCaffrey.
And they just picked up Cowing as well from Arizona.
Cowing. And they picked up Pearsall.
And Pearsall, yeah.
First round. Oh, my God. So the fact that we're loading up on guys who can cover is so timely. And it's about time we did this. It's been years in the making. I'm so relieved and excited that they're addressing this, because for years we didn't have a slot. We didn't have a slot corner. I mean, we're trying it with other guys who just weren't quite that capable of it. And obviously it wasn't working, because how often have we seen Tyler Lockett just go off on Cardinals? You know, in way too often, look at the last game of the season. How he took over the end of the game, that game. And then with him, you got Jackson Smith Najigba. And, you know, they still have Dwayne Eskridge. They've got slot. So they're, I mean, NFC West is slot oriented. Slot receivers galore. So you don't need just, you can't just have one. You need multiple. And now we have them with this, we're adding this kid in. And then we'll get to later, Jaden Davis gives us that option too. It's pretty exciting to have that kind of depth at such a key position in football these days, because you can win over the middle on offense. Typically, you can win a lot of games like the Chiefs do.
Yeah, exactly. And there's just, I'll touch on two things first, actually. The first is the fact that if there was any player in this draft who I thought we were going to pick who had come in for a 30 visit, it would have been the Rabbit. For sure.
Right.
So it's obviously there's, I like how they're obviously getting to know these players before they're, you know, bringing them in. You know, Max was one as well. And so there's that. But you're 100% right. It's, you know, the divisions are so competitive now that you need to get these guys in who can play these positions, because that's how you get to the postseason is, you know, winning your division. So it's really exciting to finally have that position. But it's a case of, it's one of the positions that, what are the probably the two areas which we've haven't focused on in the last few years, which where it's helped you win games, and that's up front in the trenches and your defensive backs. And it's two areas where we've been so lacking in the past few seasons that we've just been burnt year after year after year. So it's nice to see that these positions of value and positions of need are all being addressed in these first two drafts by this front office. So it's a great move. I'm really impressed with this pick.
It's a whole new world, Kevin.
It is.
Because get this stat that I posted out. You might have seen it on Twitter. In Steve Keim's 10 years, he drafted five cornerbacks, the best of which was Byron Murphy. And none of the others really.
You didn't even get a second contract.
Right. Now, in two drafts, we've drafted five cornerbacks, in 2 years. So, you know, what a world. It's a brand new world. I mean, this is just so great. And they're taking advantage of, a draft where it was deepest. They came away with, you know, two of the best cornerbacks, in my opinion. Actually, I like Caden Davis too. So they came away with the best cover safety, in my opinion. And then, you know, but they didn't force, like, trying to take an edge too early. It would have been tempting, but, you know, I really like the one they took. In fact, that's a great segue into the next pick, Kyle.
Well, they did finally get an edge rusher, which I'm very interested to see how they mix and match that defensive line together between the 3-4 and the Ojulares and the guard X and everything. I'm curious to see how it goes. But with their fifth round pick at number 138, The Cardinals select edge rusher Xavier Thomas from Clemson.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, this is, I'm glad we finally addressed edge rusher. Again, I think this is a fantastic value pick. Yes. You know, 6'2", 255, 32 hurries last year and 4 sacks. So the sack numbers aren't quite there, but the 32 hurries suggests that he knows how to get into the backfield. And if you watch any of the highlights or any of the clips from practice in the Shrine Bowl, what a wicked first step this kid has. He really does. And I think this is a perfect example of that low floor, high ceiling type player. And I think, you know, he's got great natural ability and, you know, he's obviously very athletic. And I think this was definitely worth taking a swing on in the fifth. You know, it's, I think it's, again, it's a solid pickup, you know, just someone who's twitchy, first step, knows how to get into the backfield, start putting pressure on the quarterback. And I think this is a great, rotational and developmental piece for that D-line. I would not be surprised to see him starting on that defensive line in one or two seasons.
Yeah, this is once again where the Cardinals tapped into the Senior Bowl as a, you know, as a breeding ground for future Cardinals. Really good, tremendous athlete. And, you know, talk about quick twitch. He's got all that. What he doesn't have are the hands yet. And so that the power in his hands to move tackles. And that will be the Rich Rodriguez, who's the Cardinals outside linebacker coach, who I think is really good. We'll get fast to work on that with him.
And wait, that once, same Rich Rodriguez, that Rich Rodriguez that used to coach Michigan? Seriously?
Yeah, the one who coached Arizona.
I had no idea. That's cool.
So really excited that he gets a player like this to help develop, because you know, you can win with speed on the NFL, and this kid's got it. He's got the bend, he's got the quick twitch redirect, stop and turn and chase. He's got all that. What he's going to need to do is get better at leverage and get better with his hands to not get engulfed by tackles. But this was a kid that was a top 100 prospect coming out of high school. I mean, he was a 5-star. So he's always been a great athlete. He's always been quick and fast. He had a rocky road at Clemson. You know, if you read Dabo Swinney's, how happy he was for this pick and for this player. He knows what Xavier Thomas has gone through. He was at Clemson through the COVID situation and through all kinds of ups and downs. But he's obviously a perseverer. And, like Kevin said, it's a low risk, high reward here in the fifth round to take a kid with this kind of ability who, coming out of high school, was regarded as one of the top prospects in the country. Sometimes it takes these kind of players develop later rather than sooner. And the Cardinals are banking on that. And I think they're going to coach him up. And it's going to be interesting to see if he gets in the rotation as a rookie. But
I would honestly be surprised if he doesn't. With how underwhelming sort of our edge presence was last year, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't see some form of game time this season.
Right. Me too. And because if you could think of it right now, if we were doing a 4-man rotation, I could see Zaven with Thomas. Now there's the other Thomas, Cameron Thomas. I still don't know what they're going to do with him, but I love him as a pass rusher. And whether they're going to stick him inside or outside. So factor him in there too, hopefully. But then you got Ojulari and Gardecki. So We got some options there. I mean, I think Gardeck is going to have a huge season. He is just unbelievably quick off that edge, and now he's powerful. Saint came so close to so many more sacks last year.
Yeah, he was quite unlucky, to be fair, last year.
Oh boy! So particularly now, Kevin and Kyle, where we have some interior rushers, we're going to have to command some attention. That's where I put Cameron Thomas next to Robinson on the inside and let him go on the tackle spots, rush the passer. That would be awesome to see that. So, all right, on to the next pick.
All right, on to the next pick. So with our second fifth round pick, which the Cardinals acquired in the trade for Josh Jones, the offensive lineman, they drafted offensive tackle Christian Jones from Texas.
Okay, so I'm just going to go out there and say it. This was my favorite pick of our draft class.
Wow.
The value of this pick is phenomenal. I think this guy is, this is outside of round one, obviously. I'm not saying that I like him over Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm not saying that. I just mean out of these later rounds, this is my favorite pick in terms of value and the player that he is. So actually in my notes here, I said I could be my favorite pick of days two and three. So I should have been a bit more precise, but over 3,200 snaps played for Texas. So he's got great experience. He's fantastic length and size, 6'6", 321. He absolutely dominated down at the Senior Bowl and still somehow flew under the radar. The only reason I could probably see that he has is because he struggled slightly with penalties, you know, but I think that's something that can be coached out of him. But I just think in terms of, you know, the size, the ability, he played right tackle. He's going to be right tackle at the next level. But I just think, yeah, I love this pick, mainly for the value of the player and how he can sit. You know, he can sit there now and he can sit behind Jonah Williams or Paris, whoever's going to be playing right tackle for us this year. I'm not sure sort of which way around we're going to be going this season, but he can sit there, develop for the 1 or 2 years. And I dare say, you know, after those 2 or 3 years, you will probably have a starting caliber tackle in the league. I think this is a fantastic pick, fantastic value. And yeah, I was very, very pleased with this pick, as you can tell.
Yeah, I was mocking him. It was pretty predictable how to mock the Cardinals on days two and three, except for the Raymond, the two Illinois kids. But particularly in day three, I think this just fell right into their laps, and they must have been giddy.
Oh, yeah.
To see Christian Jones there in the fifth round, because I know he was high. They met with him on numerous occasions. I know they were so high on him. And Clayton Adams, our offensive line coach, Chris Cook, his assistant, Cook saw him at the Senior Bowl. I mean, up close and personal, he worked with both of these guys, Adams and Jones. Wow. I mean, for all the reasons you said, plus, I mean, he gave up 3 sacks as a junior at right tackle. Last year, only 1 and only like 8 pressures. Who was it said? Was it Dallas Turner? One of the leading pass rushers who came off the board in round one said the toughest guy he went up with against in college was Christian Jones. That says a lot in itself.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think it was Dallas Turner because they played each other in the playoffs, didn't they? In the semifinals. And so to get that kind of accolade, but just watching the drills as you did and I did at the Senior Bowl, I'm looking at Christian Jones and I am absolutely salivating at the thought of him being a Cardinal. The fact that they could get him in the fifth round was just fantastic. So
Yeah, to your point, just real quick, Walter, they didn't play necessarily in the playoff, but if you'll remember, Texas went into Alabama and beat Alabama last year in a game where I believe Quinn Ewers did not take a sack, if I remember correctly.
Right. Okay, there's what it was. Right. Yep. Yeah, so Texas played who in the playoffs?
Washington.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, had it mixed up. So, yeah, thank you so much, Kyle, for that context. And wow, what a game. I watched that game. That was an amazing game. All right, next one.
All right. So now we go into the sixth round, where with pick 191, the Arizona Cardinals select wide receiver Taewon Palmer from the University of Alabama, Birmingham.
Yeah. Okay. So again, I'm glad that we finally decided to sort of double dip at receiver. It's probably a bit later than what I imagined that we would do. But again, I think that's just sort of how the board fell and the value of the picks that we previously took. So to be honest, I didn't actually know a lot about Taewon Palmer, but you know, from what I've seen since, you know, he's lengthy, speedy, good route runner, you know, average of nearly 9 yards after the catch. So he's a bit of a yak guy. But I did see that Mel Kiper actually mentioned to say if he stayed another year, he probably would have been around 3 or 4 guys. So, you know, it could be a case of great potential there to sit in the wide receiver room, which again is quite lacking talent at the moment, and just become developmental and then, or even just come in with the chance to compete, you know? So, yeah, it's like I said, I didn't know much about him at the time, but from what I've seen, you know, it's quite impressive. He does seem to have that extra gear to really stretch the field, and I think again that was what we were probably missing as well from our receiving core. So yeah, probably actually got a good chance to even stick around and make the team if he's got those abilities, which I think that we're kind of missing in the team at the moment.
Yeah, much will depend if he can assimilate on special teams, but he looks like that kind of kid who can, and he's got size, length and speed, and you watch his feet. His feet are special; they really are. At his size, woo! I mean, he's got a motor. He's got a nose for the end zone. That 50-50 ball he caught to beat Temple was awesome. At the pylon, I mean, he goes up and gets balls. He's got a complete package, and you know, I'll be disappointed if he doesn't make the team. And I'll be praying he passes through waivers, because the film on him is just too dang good. It's just too dang good. Kid can play, and great catch radius. I think he reminds me some of KJ Osborne, of the Vikings, who was like, hurt the Cardinals badly. They were trying to key on Jefferson. Osborne was getting open. Osborne's a little bit smaller, but kind of the same kind of, you know, got the dreads flowing out the back of the helmet and flying when he's flying, you know, up the sideline and nifty feet to maneuver around people. This is what this kid looks like to me. And I had heard some Taewon buzz before the draft and looked into him, and I thought, ooh, wow. But this draft class was so loaded with wide receivers, I got caught up more on the other guys. Like, I wanted Malachi Corey. There were some other guys. Roman Wilson, I'm absolutely in love with, who's I call him, you know, like poetic precision in as a route runner. I mean, he just glides open.
And now he's going to replace Deontay Johnson in Pittsburgh.
Right. Oh, they're going to love that. I'll tell you what. Pittsburgh had a tremendous draft, but I don't want to go to anyone else. I want to stick with the Cardinal. I mean, what a nifty pick. And that one surprised me because I thought maybe they were going to still at that point address other needs, but wow, it was a pleasant surprise. And then I was just like, oh my gosh, they are crushing this draft. And I was happy to see that he was on their radar after hearing the buzz about him through the grapevines. I think Brett Coleman had a little has him as one of his little gems, and turns out he's a 6'2" gem who can scoot. Very delighted with that. And now suddenly, and the Cardinals have depth and tall receivers on at wide receiver. It's awesome. So let's round it up.
All right. Last pick, seventh round, number 226. In exchange for Isaiah Simmons, the Cardinals get a seventh round pick that becomes cornerback Jaden Davis from the University of Miami.
Yeah, so there we go, another corner. So, like you said, it can never have enough, too many corners, right? So, again, didn't touch too much on Jaden, but, you know, I've looked again since. Not afraid to put in a tackle, which is obviously what I think JG likes to see from his corners. No business decisions made there. This is physical, sort of got a good run defender. And yeah, again, just fits that really physical type of back, which JG seems to like. So first three seasons, so 2019, 20, and 21. Oh, no, sorry, am I talking? 42 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 2 forced fumbles. So yeah, again, I think it's just another body to bring in. And it's what, targeted 49 times, allowing 28 receptions and 1 touchdown. So it's a pretty good ratio. But obviously, I think that's just, a bit of coaching. But I like what he brings. Yeah, I like the physicality that he brings to the role.
Yeah, I think he's a perfect guy to, you know, he's likely going to play on the practice squad. At around 7 pick, he's not going to get claimed off waivers. At the same time, you can develop him, and he's an inside-outside like the other guys. He can play the slot. He's strong. He's physically strong. He's active. He'll be good on special teams. I thought it was an excellent pick, and plus the Pat Tillman honorary pick, which I thought was really special, to take a D-back there with that spot of 20th anniversary of Pat being drafted by the Cardinals. And the significance of that is profound. This is a deserving kid. He seemed very humble on the phone, very relieved, I imagine. He was under a lot of people's radar, but this kid has started a lot of football games at Oklahoma and Miami. And he's got a lot of experience, and he's a baller. And, like, you know, he's got some big shoes to fill with Pat Tillman, but this is a kid who's going to bring it, and I think he'll make a very strong impression, and we'll be able to have him for a few years if they can hold on to him on the practice squad maybe for a year or two, and let him work his way up through the system. So, and when you're on the practice squad, you can get activated for any game if you need them, for special teams, for if we, you know, need another corner, need another nickel, we like them in a matchup. We got them. So, that was the draft. So, Kyle, overall, what did you think about the Cardinals draft?
Well, I think the most important thing was, well, one, they got a top of the line skill position player with the 4 pick, and stick and pick seemed to be what Kevin also agreed was the best call for the Cardinals. I was thinking stick and pick was the best move, and they did, regardless of who they took. But the whole way through, we were saying biggest needs were skill position player, defensive pass rusher, and cornerback. And that's what they did with their first 3 picks. They addressed exactly those needs. They went a little more unconventional after the fact, but I think once you had those 3 impact players knocked out, I think, you know, picking a running back in the third round is fine. You know, we talked about this is ultimately probably to step into the number one role sometime down the line, getting a 12 personnel tight end, drafting a couple corners, drafting a ton of depth on the defensive line, which, like I said before, I don't know how they're going to piece all this together, but between the Bilal Nichols and the Justin Jones and the Darius Robinsons and the Cam Thomas and the Xavier Thomas and the Roy Lopez and the Dante Stills and LJ Collier and BJ Ojulari and Zaven Collins. They have so many names on that defensive line. It's going to be interesting to figure out how they piece that puzzle together. But ultimately, I think if you're looking for the biggest thing to take away from the draft, it's that they hit the three impact players with the first and second round picks. They got Marvin Harrison Jr., Darius Robinson, Max Melton at positions of need. That's what they needed going into the draft. They hit it. And ultimately, if all three of those players can be impact players in year one, not only are the Cardinals not going to have the 32nd ranked DVOA defense, but they are potentially going to be able to have a top half of the league defense that supports an offense that they hope will make strides by adding a Marvin Harrison Jr., depth to the running back room, another tight end, and Palmer at the end of the first round or the end of the sixth round as well. So right. I think ultimately they did pretty well for themselves and hit on the biggest needs of the draft at the top of the draft.
Right. Excellent summary. And by the way, Kyle nailed it with Marvin Harrison Jr. I know Kevin did too on our podcast on Joe Camo's Monday Mock. So kudos to both of you for nailing it on that. Were anyone else that you had in your mock? Did anyone else line up, Kyle?
I don't believe I had any other people. I thought when they got to the third round and they had that pick, I thought Braylon Trice from Washington would be the pick there because he fell all the way to the third round, but they ultimately went running back instead. I don't believe I hit on any other picks in this draft.
Right. So, to be honest, throughout the million mocks that everyone was doing, I did a few. Here are the players that I mocked at one time or another. Marvin Harrison, Robinson, you know, Darius Robinson for sure. Max Melton, I did one day. I had him at the end of the third round with the 90th pick. Obviously, he went one sooner than that, and I think he needed to with those corners going way off the board. I had the Rabbit in there on everyone in the fourth round practically. And recently, because of I knew the Cardinals' interest in Xavier Thomas, I had him as a day three pick. Christian Jones I had in there all the time, was just hoping and praying. I didn't have Tip Raymond. I didn't have the only two I really – and Tajon Palmer wasn't on Brock Draft Simulators, but I probably would have because I knew – Brett Coleman said about him as a seventh rounder, I thought he would be perfect. So not Palmer and not either of the two Illinois kids who now I think I've learned. And that's what I learned from Monty in this draft was how carefully he and the scouts and the coaches who were heavily involved this offseason, the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game was such a collective effort. And a lot of hands-on coaching of these kids at the Senior Bowl, East-West Shrine Game. Just awesome how they pulled this whole thing together. Want to, you know, give kudos to them. And so now, you know, it's going to be interesting. I started to try to do an early roster prediction. That's going to be really – I'd love to see Kevin's, you know, someday soon. There are going to be some very curious roster decisions that will need to be made because we are now suddenly really deep in some areas and some good football players are going to have to be waived more likely than not. And with the hope, obviously, of getting them into, you know, on the practice squad, not claimed. But Kevin, do you do stuff like that? Do you do a roster prediction?
I don't, but I think I will, to be honest. I think it's a really interesting idea to sort of go through and tear down this roster and see sort of who I think is going to make it and who we're going to carry on from this year. So especially from this draft as well, you know, with the amount of picks that we've made this year, I do think that there are quite a few guys, like you mentioned earlier, on the bubble. So, yeah, I think now, you know, free agency is done as well. If we make any more moves, pick up any more veterans, I think it'll be quite an interesting exercise to do. Right. So,
right. And I think if there's a chance to add another edge, Monty's going to do that. I think other than that, my biggest roster question right off the bat was, can they keep three quarterbacks? And, you know, in this day and age, you really want to, but you can stash one on the practice squad. You know, I'd just be worried that, you know, Clayton Tune would get claimed and be like, oh, God. And then now you need a, you know, but I'm hoping they can keep three quarterbacks, but every roster spot's going to be, it's going to be a fascinating decision between, you know, some of the older veterans that they now have on this team, particularly the ones where their positions were drafted. Yeah, I would say their chances of sticking. Like, I don't know how you can keep Zach Pascal now. You know, I mean, love him as a special teams player and as a blocking wide receiver, but, you know, I mean, are you not going to cut a draft pick, are you?
No, I agree. I think he's another player that's, it's purely, pretty much all he contributed last year was blocking and special teams. So is that worth a roster spot?
Right. I mean, that's the thing where you have to weigh about roster decisions is 4 years versus one, you know, and also, I mean, Wani did a good job of this last year of cutting guys that he didn't think would get claimed. He did a good job of that. Give Monty credit for how he predicted how this draft was going to come out, how he predicted how the first three picks would be quarterbacks, how he was prepared for all of that, how he was able to make the trades back to acquire more picks, knowing that the guy that he really wanted would still be there. I mean, wow, that's some prescient ability put to use by Monty. He's kind of a swami about that. That's not easy to do. That's why this day three was like clockwork. Every one of these guys they had lined up and were hoping to take them at those specific spots. But we can get into the roster thing later. We'd like to have Kevin back. We'll do a roster show where preseason roster we're going in, and then we can compare towards the end. How does that sound, Kevin?
Yeah, that sounds great. I'd love to.
Yeah, well, we'll give you advance notice. You can put one together. It's not going to be easy. 53 guys with this kind of depth.
Yeah, that's a lot of players right now.
It is, and some of my favorite players are now squarely like DeMarcado. Now you'd have to think is squarely on the bubble because of the numbers game. And I think DeMarcado's a special kid. I mean, and the way that he blocks, he's the best blocker on the team in the backfield in pass pro. So that was a guy I'm just hoping they could stick with for 4 years at least. So, but now with the additions that they made, you know, with Trey Benson, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, if I had to weigh Amari DeMarcado versus Michael Carter, I mean, I love Carter, but he's going to be a free agent. Now that we drafted Benson, Carter's, you know, it'd be nice to keep him around. But weighing that decision of, you know, it'd be hard, you know, because Carter's he's a great receiver out of the backfield. But Amari does so many great things. How about those touchdown runs he had? The one against the Niners was awesome. Man, there's something special about him. He had that great day in college in our own stadium where he rushed for like 140 yards. Unbelievable. So, yeah, the roster stuff is going to be really interesting. Cardinals fans, ROTB fans, if you have roster questions or thoughts, I'd love to hear them in the thread. Because right now, you know, look, my favorite is our lads. They have the the depth chart going, and they update it every second they can. I mean, they're right on top of everything. By the way, with our lads, they have four of our rookies starting. Guess who the four are?
So, see, it'll be Marv, yep. Darius. Yep. I'm going to say, going to have Xavier Thomas.
Nope.
Oh, so close.
I'm definitely try. Isaiah Adams. Definitely Isaiah Adams.
Isaiah you Adams. Did.
They plugged and played him right away, starting left guard. That's an interesting call from them, you know, to do that. I like the way these guys think. I think it's quite possible that he's going to plug and play right there. Maybe not right from the start, but as soon as they get a chance. You know how they platooned Wilkinson and Cologne? I think you might see a platoon early between Wilkinson and Adams, and then with Adams taking over full time. But we'll see. But that is if Wilkinson now makes the team. I mean, they signed Evan Brown to like $2.5 million a year. He plays guard, and he's a center, too. I mean, they're loaded backup centers.
Yeah, it's either Wilkinson or Cologne. That's probably the 10th offensive line spot is probably between those two.
Yeah. So they had Adams, Harrison, Robinson. Who's the fourth?
Is it Mad Max?
Yes. Yeah. And they have Tejon Palmer listed as the second slot. Imagine him in the slot.
Interesting.
Ooh, I love that. Love that. You know, so, and then they have a bunch of these rookies as second teamers. They got Elijah Jones behind Sean Murphy Bunting. They got Dadrian Taylor, the rabbit behind Buddha. Imagine going from a honey badger to a rabbit. Pretty cool. We ought to give animal names to all our guys. What would we give the animal name to Tip Raymond? Like a zebu? Guy is...
Zebu. At the very least, that's my nickname for him now. I don't know if it's going to catch on, but I'm going to call him a zebu.
Zebu. Man, he's got the size. So, you know, it's go to our lads, folks. Check it out. Try to come up. That's my homework for all of you at ROTB. We'll do a thread next week at some point where I'll try my hand at it originally to try to do it because I kind of like to do it right after the draft just as a check see. But that's just for making the team, not doing, starting positions yet. But give yourself a shot at it. You got 53 to decide, and you have to decide for yourself which ones you think you can sneak through to waivers. And, you know, typically you want to keep all your draft picks. I think that of all of them, Jaden Davis is pretty safe to be able to stay on the practice squad. They probably can clear him by waivers, but you never know. Let's see what he looks like. But, Kevin, some parting words from you from the UK.
Yeah, sure. So the one thing I just want to make out is the fact that I always try to be give it an equal view to how we're doing. I don't always want to be singing Monty's praises in this front office praises, but in my opinion, over these, from what we've seen for these last two drafts and obviously the season and obviously the pre-draft process last year, I honestly, at this current time, don't have anything negative to say about it. I think the way they've approached it, everything has been fantastic. We all knew last year would be a bit of a down season, inheriting the team that they did. But the way that Monty's attacked this and really stripped down this roster, they've really started to build this identity, which is really clear for all to see now, how the type of player and the way that we want to play and for how we were playing last season as well is so exciting. So it's nice to see, obviously my time as a Cardinals fan, I only ever knew Steve Keim as the GM, And now obviously seeing Monty and seeing the two different, you know, sides of it.
Right.
It's just so exciting to see, you know, this draft again. I was completely incorrect when I said I didn't think that we'd making 11 picks, all 11 picks. We actually ended up making 12 picks and we made all of them. So, yep. You know, they've identified that there's holes in this roster. They've attacked this draft with great talent, at great value, in positions of need and positions of value. And it's great. You know, it's team building in the right way, which in all honesty, I don't know if I ever saw in Steve Keim's regime a draft this sort of with this much sense, if that makes sense. If that makes sense, you know, to see sort of a very clear identity about the type and of players they wanted to get. So it's really exciting. You know, maybe we'll come back in two or three times once the hyperbole of this draft class has died down. But honestly, at this moment in time, it's so exciting to be a Cardinals fan. And yeah, I can't wait to see what this season brings.
And that's the thing that I learned from this draft, how much it made sense upon further review.
Yeah.
You know, some of the positions that he addressed with players that we didn't expect at first glance was like, what? Wait, what? And then you look more closely at the why. You know, I'll just quickly end with Cooper Beebe's too heavy at 335 to play in this offense. He just is. I couldn't mock him as much as I wanted to. Now, he is tremendous. I mean, in Dallas, he'll be fantastic. I mean, in their system, you know, they just want to move people off the ball, you know, come right after. There's not as much movement in what they do as what the Cardinals do.
Yeah.
And so that's a different setup there. And he'll be good there.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my biggest knock on him as well, is he wasn't just a very good mover. Like, he needs to sort for this team. But if there's any team that he fits, like you mentioned, it's Dallas. And I would have drafted him to the Cowboys 10 times out of 10.
You know, it pained me because, you know, Christian Mahogany at Boston College, one of the greatest. We're an O-line factory for the NFL. Chris Lindstrom, you go right down the line of great offensive linemen we've sent to the NFL. I love Christian Mahogany, but I had to concede I couldn't see him in a Petzing offense. It's just not—he's just not made for that. You know, he'd be great in Dallas, for example. And I can't believe he lasted till the sixth round because of the talent that he has. But it goes back to the knee injury he suffered, and maybe it was a tick slower in his rehab, and not the rehab, but in his level of his play last year. He didn't give up a sack. I mean, he was all ACC. I mean, the kid is a mauler. But I had to be realistic. I couldn't keep mocking him because I had to be realistic and think, I don't think he'd be on Monty's radar as much as some other players. So, you know, this was a real strong learning experience. And there were a number of aha moments in this draft when, and Kevin came up with the perfect word, when suddenly the pick made sense. And it was pretty clear why this player was taken in this spot. And, you know, so pretty excited about it, and was really delighted to have Kevin on with us, hopefully for many more times. And Kyle, parting word from you?
I am excited to see what comes next. I know we're kind of in the slow off season part, but I'm excited to see what comes next for the Arizona Cardinals now that we have depth pieces and, my math is correct, 23 draft picks now selected by Monty and Dave Sears in the new regime.
Right. Yeah. Well, Kyle was a great part of this pre-draft process. His show on his off-season plan for the Cardinals was the third most popular show of the off-season thus far. And kudos to that, and for great reason. Kevin, he had us signing Chris Jones as a free agent. It was lofty in the beginning. And dang, if we
never did hit free agency, unfortunately.
He never did, so you can't blame. But he nailed, Kyle, what else did you nail? What did you nail in this? You know, he got Jonah Williams right way back when at the beginning of free agency. Cool.
Nice.
Yeah, he got Jonah Williams. So he did a great job. And Kevin, it's been great getting to know you and really appreciate it. Yeah, why don't you give us your info on where you can be reached and about your podcast?
Yeah, sure. No worries. So, yeah, like I mentioned, I run a podcast called Let's Talk Cardinals. I try to put an episode out at least once a week, but the last few weeks have been quite busy in sort of personal life, unfortunately. But yeah, if not, you can reach me on Twitter at Cardinals Pod, or on my personal, which is the one I typically tend to tweet at most out of at the moment, which is at UberKev, which was actually made before Uber became a thing, I'd like to point out, which was 15, 16 years ago I made that Twitter handle. So, so yeah, you can reach me on both of those on Twitter.
Outstanding. And we got to let you go. It's 5 o'clock in Britain, right?
It is 5 o'clock. Yes, it is now 5 o'clock. Sun's still shining. So I think I might go and take my son out to the park, I think. So make the most of this English weather.
Oh, fantastic. Well, have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Once again, thanks to Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter for all that he does for this show. And to all of you, hope you enjoyed draft weekend. Please, respond, tell us what you wanted, in this draft, what you learned, because I think it was a learning experience for all of us. And if you had some aha moments, please let us know. Appreciate all your support. Until next time, may the red rain shower down on you into the red, red sea. From British pop artist Peter Gabriel. Red Rain.